This is the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. Welcome to 2007. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Smashed statues may solve the riddle of a Greek island. 4,000-year-old grains of rice are found in China. And a 9,000-year-old artifact stirs up archaeological excitement in Canada. The Tay Logboat in Scotland provides insight into Bronze Age technology, and amateur archaeologists are closing in on their ultimate goal at a burial mound in England. Biro e Conchas is a Sardinian megalithic wonder, and a huge wind farm may threaten archaeology in Scotland. A Greek-British team of archaeologists have unearthed a cache of deliberately broken prehistoric statues that could help finally solve the Keros riddle. The barren islet was of major importance to the mysterious Cycladic people, a sophisticated pre-Greek civilization with no written language that flourished 4,500 years ago and produced strikingly modern-looking artwork. Out of all of the documented statues, known as Cycladic figurines, in museums and collections worldwide, more than half were found on this little island. During excavations in the spring and early summer, Professor Colin Renfrew's team found an undisturbed trove of figurines missed by looters who had ransacked the islet in the 1950s and 60s. They all had been deliberately smashed around 2,500 BCE. They have hundreds of marble bowl fragments and many dozens of figurine fragments, which don't seem to fit together. The excavation disproves theories that the artifacts came from cemeteries, as new human bones were found, or were only broken by modern vandals, as the breakages are definitely old. The figurines weren't smashed there either, as you would find bits that would fit together, and there's differential weathering suggesting that not only were they broken elsewhere, but it was some time as they've become weathered as well. Renfrew believes the figurines, some originally up to a metre high, may have come from religious sanctuaries spread throughout the Cyclades, and pottery finds indicate that the site could have attracted worshippers from as far away as mainland Greece. Maybe at some point in the life cycle of the figures, they were richly smashed and taken to Keros in a ceremony. Experts agree that the elegant marble figurines, which initially had details painted on in bright colours, were highly prized in the early Bronze Age, but still don't understand for what purpose they were made. Some 1,400 have survived, although only 40% of them are of known origin, as looters have destroyed evidence of the rest. The figurines were made following a pattern that changed little over 800 years. They have been variously interpreted as depicting gods or venerated ancestors, serving as replacements for human sacrifice, grave goods, or even children's toys. While Colin Renfrew believes that they should not be associated with cemeteries in which many were found, he concedes that there is little evidence of how they were actually used in everyday life. In the coming year, excavations will focus on a nearby rock at Daskalio, which Renfrew believes was one of the main Cycladic sites. There are huge quantities of building stone littering the surface, and it's clearly a very large settlement of the early Bronze Age. 20 grains of rice more than 4,000 years old have been found at Guiyebaichiu ruins in Guangdong Province, southern China. This and other finds are shedding light on the activities of the inhabitants and their environment. The site was discovered in 1986, but it hasn't been explored until September 2006 because of highway construction. This week, a team of archaeologists, including an honorary president of the Guangzhou Museum, inspected the site. They say it was important to the understanding of the late Neolithic period. The site is of great significance and covers an area as large as a football field. Just one quarter is under excavation thus far. Unearthed objects include pottery, animal remains and plant fossils. The grains of rice will help reveal the origins of agriculture in this area. Guangdong's Archaeological Research Institute will apply the find for the top 10 discoveries in China 2006. The black flint stone shaped like a spearhead immediately caught Joan Rennick's eye during a routine beach stroll one summer afternoon 7 years ago. She started wearing the rock around her neck every day for good luck, without knowing that her talisman was in fact a 9,000-year-old artifact. Now, after a prehistoric tool was authenticated, a local archaeologist is planning to dig the beach around the fittingly named Cape Spear region in Canada. Archaeologist Brent Sutty believes the artifact was crafted into a hunting weapon between 7,000 and 7,500 BCE. It's a period that marked a transition for Eastern North American civilization, as populations started shifting from a nomadic lifestyle to a more sedentary one. Few artifacts, and even fewer sites dating from the time, have been discovered on the Canadian East Coast. In this context, your find could be instrumental in understanding the nature and cause of the changes. So far, scientists have found only a few archaeological sites in Maine that could shed light on the Paleo-Indian period. That thousand-year time frame separates the Paleo-Indian period, which started after the end of the last ice age, and the Archaic period, which spanned until 1000 BCE in North America. During the transition between the two periods, indigenous populations traded their projectile points made of flint for axes and gouges made for larger and heavier ground stones. But scientists are puzzled as to whether the changes developed within communities on the East Coast or were brought by a migrant population. This is why Rennick's artifact is so important. Rennick said she had brought the stone to Moncton Museum 4 years ago, but officials there failed to recognise the value of the object. Last December, as she watched a National Geographic show on the Discovery Channel that illustrated how prehistoric men hunted, she was startled to see the same spearheads pictured on television. She called back to the museum and they put her in touch with Mr. Sutty, who immediately recognised the object when he saw it in February. The archaeologist photographed, measured and weighed the artifact and then returned it to its owner. She plans to keep on wearing it around her neck. A Bronze Age logboat, which had lain unseen on the River Tay in Scotland for 3,000 years, is being studied by archaeologists. It is hoped to find will yield important new information about how our human ancestors lived. Although the boat, made from a single oak trunk, was found 5 years ago, it was only lifted out of the Tay during the summer, as we reported earlier this year. Repairs carried out in the 30-foot vessel have already given experts an insight into Bronze Age technology. The boat, which would have been powered by up to 12 men, is being studied by archaeologists in Edinburgh, who have claimed it to be one of the best examples of its kind in Scotland. Experts have also been intrigued about the discovery of sulphur in the wood. Noel Foyot of Historic Scotland said there are very advanced techniques now for analysing the material, such as what was used to make the repair in the middle of the boat, and they can now do a lot with a very small sample, so the boat looks just as it did before. The logboat currently has to be kept wet, preventing it from drying out and cracking. However, once the research has finished, it will be injected with chemicals and freeze-dried to preserve it and hopefully allow for its public display. A dedicated band of volunteers in Sutton is throwing light on Bronze Age people who settled, worked and traded in East Cambridgeshire in England. For more than 3 years now, a group of volunteers, the Sutton Archaeological Group, have worked steadily to excavate a Bronze Age barrow at the village's gravel pit. The barrow, an ancient burial mound, has already provided a glimpse into the activities of the people in the area, but the team hopes to dig even further and perhaps find some human remains. The project began after villager Jill Shapland decided an application could be made to the local heritage initiative to investigate Sutton's Bronze Age past. Very little is known about the area, but they did know that the Bronze Age people moved from the easily defended hills to areas like Sutton following the onset of a wetter climate. Settlers would have made the most of the plentiful supply of water that surrounded the area on nearly every side. A group were formed with fellow enthusiasts Alex Tinker and Liz Hawkins, and together they decided on a site to carry out their excavations. The barrow they settled on was a perfect location because Dickersons, the company excavating the quarry, were happy for the group to carry out the work and have since assisted by providing a mechanical digger. The group then went about making an application to the local heritage initiative through parent organisation the Sutton Conservation Group and were delighted when they received £25,000. Members of the conservation group and other villagers quickly stepped forward to volunteer their services and work began on the site in 2003. The site is closed for the year now, but they normally go down on Saturdays and Sundays, so little was known about the Bronze Age in the area and the dig has now become a very exciting place. The group has uncovered tools and animal bones, but as they dug deeper, they found a rich supply of pottery that had been the star find so far. The pottery is in excellent condition, and it provides evidence that these people had trading links with the continent. All the finds have been carefully catalogued with the help of professional archaeologists from the County Council's Archaeology Field Unit, and the group have staged regular exhibitions to keep the community informed about progress. A series of samples have been taken from the dig for pollen analysis as well. These will help tie down the dating of the barrow more accurately and will provide a good picture of the vegetation and environment that the people were living in. The real hope for the group, however, is that they find a real live, or shall I say dead, Bronze Age person in the mound, or at least what's left of them. It is the aim of the group to resume the dig next year, and its members hope to recruit some new faces as the project steps up a gear. Funding has been extended until 2008, and they would very much welcome anyone who is interested in helping out. So, if you're interested in helping the Sutton Archaeological Group, contact their secretary, Alex Tinker, on 01353 775 256, or Liz Hawkins on 01353 777 735. Now, there's a resolution for people in the area. Let's make 2007 a year of community projects. Near the village of Sorgona in Sardinia lies what is probably one of the lesser-known megalithic wonders of the world, an impressive Neolithic site of 200 tall stones, 30 of them aligned east-west on a double row, and the rest lying on the ground. This striking concentration of stones is located on a 5-hectare area called the Biru e Conchas, Path of the Heads. The discovery was made 15 years ago by Francesco Mancia, an amateur archaeologist who used to be also one of the former mayors of Sorgona. Around the impressive stone alignments, traces of circular huts, maybe a Nuragic settlement built much later, have been found, along with hidden water spring, while on a nearby hills, two Nuragi, a giant's tomb and a dolmen have been found. The local superintendence has led 2 excavation projects, and the work has been very long and difficult because archaeologists had to re-erect the stones back in their original upright positions. But now, Biru e Conchas has the largest concentration of standing stones in the whole Mediterranean. They're looking for a grant and a further excavation season at the site. And recently, the Ministro di Beni Culturali gave green light to the project and allocated €400,000 to a third excavation season. The site has been included in the National Archaeology Plan. They hope that soon everyone can admire the 200 menhirs aligned on the sacred hill just as they were placed 5,000 years ago. The company behind the UK's largest onshore wind farm project, proposed for the Hebridean island of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides of Scotland, has unveiled revised plans for the scheme. The reworked proposal comprises 181 wind turbines compared with the 234 that were originally planned. While the overall number of turbines has been reduced, the impact on the archaeology of Lewis may be catastrophic. The real problem is not just that the archaeology of Lewis is practically unknown, but the whole of the interior of the island is covered by raised peat bog that can be several metres thick. This was formed since the Bronze Age. Callanish, before it was excavated, was just a few stones sticking up through over a metre of this bog. So there's likely to be a whole buried prehistoric landscape below the peat, but it's very difficult to detect. Numerous stone circles, burial mounds, cemeteries, settlements and houses, burnt mounds, fields, field boundaries can all be expected. This could be potentially one of the best preserved prehistoric landscapes in the world. The threat, however, is very real. It's not just a few turbines, but massive foundations that need to anchor them into the rock. Then access roads, cabling, all of them will have to go through the peat right to the bedrock. The £500 million proposed development has been vigorously opposed by conservation groups and anti-wind farm campaigners. So far, the main objectors from outside the island have been the RSPB. There's very little evidence that there has been much of an outcry from other archaeologists. The council backed the plan despite receiving more than 4,000 letters of objections. The developer, Lewis Wind Power, predicts that some 400 jobs will be created during the manufacturing phase, with more once the wind farm is operational. Communities will also receive payments, some of which can be exchanged for a stake in the wind farm. So, just before we go into the new year, for some of you already be into the new year, I'd just like to wish everyone the best for 2007 and look back over a few stories from 2006. In January, we saw the report on the Bronze Age boat, the Magan, and its ill-fated attempts to travel from Oman to India. And then we had the world's oldest temple, dating back to around 12,000 years, located on Göbekli Hill in Turkey's San Urfa province. In March, we heard the startling conclusion of climate researchers who said that man-made global warming is not a modern phenomenon at all, and it's been going on for thousands of years due to early farmers chopping down trees and clearing forests. And by May, we have an Egyptian geologist saying that the hill in central Bosnia appeared to be a primitive human-made pyramid of uncertain age, and in fact managed to back the Bosnian pyramid claim. Quite startling there. In July, we learned that a dam was to drown 7,000 years of Iranian history, just one more in a long list of sites around the world continually under threat from dams, energy plants, wind farms and roads. There was, however, some good news in Bulgaria of sorts, with archaeologists finding many unique and rich Thracian tombs just before the looters managed to. That was back in August. In October, we learned of a gathering place of native peoples that for the past three summers has been excavated as a model of cooperation amongst researchers, archaeologists, developers and American Indian representatives. All this in Danbury in Ohio. November saw a story which caught my eye about twins buried together in red pigment that may ultimately bear on the question of whether humans interbred with Neanderthals. The rare find from a 27,000-year-old site in Austria included two bodies sheltered under a mammoth's shoulder blade. A real moment in time that connects us quite clearly with the past. However, I'm now going to look to the future and wish you all a happy new year again. And can I remind you, as ever, that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And now a new site has been launched to open up opportunities across the world. Past Horizons. www.pasthorizons, that's all one word, .com. That was www.pasthorizons.com. Remember, more could always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to the Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return to us again.